The House of Representatives did not follow our lead. They allowed the Farm Bill to expire at the end of last year, which is why we are here again.
We might not get credit for it from the great American consumers, but they'll benefit as they have from every Farm Bill since the passage of the very first one in 1933.
I know how important this is. What I'm trying to let people know is that EPA remains open to new data and new information.
I really don't understand the opposition to this technology.
In my lifetime, I have never seen a crop like we've had this year. We have been blessed by the good Lord, and we are very thankful.
Each state set new records for corn yield. This credit mostly to the cool summer, but also to the improved precipitation in the Corn Belt.
What you need to do is you need to step over the dead ones and take care of the live ones. That's exactly what folks in western South Dakota are doing.
There's obviously tremendous disasters that have occurred, particularly in the livestock area. I can't help but provide assistance, cash assistance, to those producers who have suffered through a drought or a snowstorm until I get a Farm Bill.
There's a lot of emotion on our side, too. In fact, I think ours is far more compelling. And that's all about affordable food.
I'm Julie Harker.
I'm Ken Anderson.
I'm Bob Meyer.
I'm Megan Grebner.
I'm John Perkins.
I'm Dave Russell.
I'm Jerry Passer.
I'm Cindy Young, Brownfield, Ag News for America.
2013 was notable for its familiarity. Familiar because Congress once again failed to pass long-awaited federal farm policy, but unfamiliar because, unlike the past, when farm bills were accomplished with at least some bipartisan cooperation, momentum for such legislation seemed to dissolve in the face of partisan bickering. It began on a familiar note of weather that one observer found in common with 1947. The end result, however, was that the 2013 growing season was better than that year. It was also much different than in 2012, with a much better outcome for crops. On the other hand, an early October South Dakota blizzard, this one earning the name Atlas, caught cattlemen off guard and resulted in heavy losses of cattle and other livestock. A virus heretofore not found in the U.S. has been particularly lethal to baby pigs, and the controversial and divisive issue of horse slaughter is back in the hands of judges. Hello, everyone. I'm Tom Stever. This is 2013, the year in review, on Brownfield, Ag News for America. We begin with a recent conversation that I had with U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, recalling his frustration at the close of 2012 without a new farm bill. The same has happened this year. But Secretary Vilsack pointed out what's changed.
Well, Tom, I feel somewhat like a groom at the altar. Keep looking down the aisle waiting for the bride to come down. I believe in 2013 she got in the church, but she's still not down the aisle. And I think there's still work yet to be done. I think what we are trying to point out to the folks who are working in the conference committee is that there are so many benefits to the passage of a farm bill. The ability for us, for example, to aggressively go out and begin to continue to market agricultural products around the world. We've experienced record trade in the last 5 years, a record year last year. Well, we cannot be as aggressive right now because our trade promotion programs have expired absent a new farm bill. There's obviously tremendous disasters that have occurred in the last couple of years, particularly in the livestock area. I can't help and provide assistance, cash assistance, to those producers who have suffered through a drought or a snowstorm until I get a farm bill. So there are benefits that can accrue, the certainty of having a farm bill, allowing folks to plan accordingly for 2014 and beyond, the conservation opportunities that this bill will create, the new research opportunities. I mean, it is a job creator, and it's an income producer for farmers, and it's a budget saver. So a lot of benefits, and there's some drawbacks. If we don't get this done, if we continue to linger, we've got Brazil trade retaliation that's coming down the pike, and we of course have the looming concern of the implementation of permanent law, which could create shortages and high costs for consumers. So a lot of reasons and a lot of reasons why it becomes extremely important for this work to get done.
You said at the outset, though, that the bride has entered the church. So what progress has there been in the last year that might be encouraging?
Well, we have a conference. We have two bills, one passed by the House, one passed by the Senate. We've had a conference committee, and we've had the leadership of that conference committee working in the last couple of months to try to work out the differences between the two bills, and I think they have worked out a lot of differences. I think there's still a handful of issues that they're still dealing with, but I think there is a real commitment to getting it done, and my hope is that leadership can complete its work on a framework in the next week or so, declare that that's been done, and basically set up set the table for the bride to get to the altar, if you will, by the first week in January, have a conference committee report out and have the House and Senate expeditiously vote in favor of this bill and get it to the president's desk very, very, very soon.
As I talk to producers up and down the upper Midwest, I find that more than the farm bill was mentioned, it was the fact that they were able to harvest more than they expected, and I think that's the key there, more than they expected considering there was a dry July and August. What are your comments as we end the year just as the harvest is concerned?
Well, first of all, it doesn't surprise me that our producers are productive. We have the greatest farmers in the world, and they have utilized technology to the point where it's one of the most productive aspects of and most efficient aspects of our economy. It provides extraordinary diversity and accessibility of food. It makes us a food secure nation, and we have affordability in food that's unmatched. It allows us to continue to promote with, if we have trade promotion programs, to be able to sell and market our product overseas because of the surpluses that these farmers can produce. It helps to restore some of the stocks that have been getting a bit low. Now, that, of course, alters price, and obviously we keep an eye on price. We want that nice balance between prices that can allow everyone to be profitable. There have been concerns, obviously, in the livestock industry when prices were, from their perspective, too high, and now we're beginning to be a bit concerned and keeping an eye on the prices in terms of the commodity producers, corn, soybeans in particular. But that's why we aggressively want to promote trade. It's why we need a new farm bill that enhances research. It's why we need opportunities to have a safety net that works for farmers when times are tough, when market conditions aren't particularly cooperative or Mother Nature doesn't cooperate. It's why we need to continue to look for ways to create new products from what we grow. That's why the rural development programs of a farm bill are so important. So it all gets back, Tom, to the need for Congress to get this bill done. I believe with the certainty of a bill, a certainty of a budget over 2 years, and the certainty of a workforce, there's nothing American agriculture can't do.
Thank you very much for your time today, and I appreciate that, and best wishes for you in the new year.
Likewise, Tom, and to your listeners.
Although now in the hands of a House and Senate conference committee, the Farm Bill went another year without substantive action. The Senate managed to pass its version of the Farm Bill. The House's version passed that chamber only after the nutrition title was stripped from the measure and allowed to stand on its own. Before any of that happened, in May, Senate Ag Committee Chairperson Debbie Stabenow of Michigan opened debate by pointing to the reason that Senate lawmakers would have to revisit U.S. farm policy again. This is part of her floor speech back on May 20th.
The House of Representatives did not follow our lead. They allowed the Farm Bill to expire at the end of last year, which is why we are here again, working through this process.
On the 15th of May, just prior to House markup of the Farm Bill, House Ag Committee Chair Frank Lucas spoke to farm broadcasters about the measure, concluding his remarks with these words.
I think we have a very solid Farm Bill moving forward. In spite of my friends on the left in the United States House who don't want to spend any money on rural America, and my friends on the right who don't want to spend any money on anybody on any occasion for any reason, we'll still achieve that consensus of the middle, and we'll make sure that not only the folks in the countryside have that safety net they need, but we'll also assure our friends who may not necessarily understand where their food comes from, we'll assure them a safe supply, a safety net, a certainty there. We might not get credit for it from the great American consumers, but they'll benefit as they have from every farm bill since the passage of the very first one in 1933.
For the second straight year, the farm bill languished in Congress, but as the year comes to a close, there are positive signs that it may finally come to fruition. Brownfield's Megan Grebner gives us this report.
After many stops and starts in 2013, House Ag Committee Chair Frank Lucas announced in mid-December that he and other farm bill negotiators would have a five-year farm bill ready for House and Senate consideration in January. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, who has been urging Congress to pass a new farm bill for the past 2 years, told Brownfield he hopes it really happens this time.
I think rural America has been quite patient with Congress, and I suspect that people are very tired and frustrated at the uncertainty that's occurred, but hopefully we are very close, and hopefully we get this done in the next 30, 45 days.
Why has it been so difficult to pass a new farm bill? The general dysfunction in Congress is seen as part of the problem. Some pundits also blamed it on the lack of unity in agriculture, but National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson disagreed.
I'm not so sure that I would say that this is agriculture not being united. I think it is fair to say that much of agriculture is doing pretty well, and so you don't have as much political pressure that results from that.
And then there was the debate over splitting the farm bill. Indiana Congressman and fourth-generation farmer Marlon Stutzman was one of the biggest proponents of splitting the bill.
I just can't, in good conscience, as a farmer, vote for a bill that's titled, you know, as a farm bill and sold as a farm bill to the American people, when so little of it actually does deal with agriculture.
In July, the House did manage to pass a farm-only version of a farm bill, but that didn't last for long. Many farmers, such as Wood River, Nebraska crop producer Curtis Rorick, think a lot of people, including many members of Congress, seem to be taking the nation's food production system for granted.
They forgot the importance of food, the safety net, and I guess everybody's bellies are full, and so it's not at the top of the complaint list, I guess, is what they're saying.
As for the details of the farm bill, committee leaders said we'd have to wait until January, but as year ended, some information on the agreement had leaked out. According to a DTN report, the bill will cut SNAP payments, the food stamp program, by $8 billion over 10 years, twice what the Senate wanted, but only a fifth of what the House approved. And on the commodity title, it appears farmers will have a choice between payments based on revenue losses and one based on target prices. Payments would be made on base acreages, but it appears likely farmers will be able to update their bases to reflect changes in what they grow, compared with the 1980s when the current bases were established. I'm Megan Grebner on Brownfield.
Dairy policy has always been a contentious part of farm bill negotiation, and that continues today. Bob Meyer has that story.
One of the big challenges over the years for dairy producers, the dramatic fluctuation in the market. While there is a federal price support system in place, on occasion milk prices fall below that support price, but don't stay there long enough to trigger government action. And each time that happens, some dairy producers go out of business. So the National Milk Producers Federation decided to develop a plan. They spent 2 years gathering input from producers and industry people across the country and developed what was called the Foundation for the Future. There were three key elements: a margin protection plan for producers, a market stabilization plan, which would trigger production limits in times of overproduction and low prices, and a reform of the federal milk marketing order system. After rolling out the plan, National Milk again gathered input on the idea and ended up making some changes. They found reform of the federal milk marketing orders was going to be much too cumbersome to tackle in this way, and they also ran into a fair amount of opposition to that supply management provision from processors, exporters, and some dairy producers. So they made some changes in what evolved into the Dairy Security Act. Among the changes, participation would be voluntary. Chris Galen is Vice President of Communications with National Milk.
There's no mandatory growth management option or supply management. However, if you want to get free money from the government in the form of margin insurance, you have to subject yourself to the market stabilization aspect. But if you don't want that, and you don't want the government telling you what to do, you don't have to be part of it. It's completely voluntary.
Minnesota Congressman Colin Peterson, ranking member of the House Ag Committee, introduced the Dairy Security Act of 2011 in September of that year, saying it would prevent a repeat of the dairy market collapse of 2009. The plan would go on to be included in the 2012 Farm Bill. But opposition to the supply management provision did not go away. Wisconsin dairy farmer Jerry Meisner, president of the Dairy Business Association, leading the charge.
Our Dairy Business Association has worked very hard with processors to grow the processing industry. We feel that's the best interest as producers, the better the processors grow, and they've started to invest millions and millions of dollars in industry. They're concerned of a supply management issue that will limit the amount of milk we produce, and where does that put them with their expansion? So we think there's a lot of potential. By 2050, the world is going to see a 70 to a 90% increase in population. Why should we allow the rest of the world to take advantage of this, of feeding the world, and inhibit our U.S. dairy industry?
In April, Virginia Republican Congressman Bob Goodlatte, Georgia Democrat Congressman David Scott introduced the Dairy Freedom Act, providing the same margin insurance as the Dairy Security Act, but without the supply management provision. Instead, the plan offers a free margin insurance protection for producers up to 4 million pounds of milk production. Above that, they would pay a premium for additional coverage. The House version of the Farm Bill sent to the conference committee includes the Goodlatte-Scott Amendment. The Senate version does not. And given the fact that the leadership of both the Senate and House Ag Committees support the supply management provision, it is expected to be included in whatever comes out of the conference committee. As to whether there will be another attempt to change it on the floor is yet to be seen. I'm Bob Meyer, Brownfield.
For farmers like Lane Oswald of Preble County, Ohio, two stories top his list for 2013. And there's even one on his list for 2014.
I think the abundance of yields that we never believed could happen, and what the market can do with the excess grain. The Farm Bill disaster has been definitely a story of 2013. The hope that in 2014 they'll get that figured out. I think the future of water in Ohio is going to be a story for 2014 for sure.
For Fred Yoder, a past president of the National Corn Growers Association who farms near Plain City, Ohio, his top story.
This is the very best, most productive year I've ever had. We did this all in spite of the problems we had in Washington. We don't have a farm bill. We don't have a real good hold on our biofuels bills. We got some challenges as far as policy, but I really, really enjoyed farming this year because there's nothing better than growing a huge crop, and it was fun.
Water is the top story for Bruce McFerrin, Dean of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences at The Ohio State University.
I don't know that it started or ended in 2013, but for me, the issue of water and water quality pops up every growing season. We have to work on this. The world is expecting a great food supply, affordable, safe, abundant, but they're also expecting a high standard of living from environmental quality. And this is a job that we simply have to tackle and work to resolve.
And finally, rather than look back at 2013, Ray Gasser of Iowa, president of the American Soybean Association, looked ahead to 2014. And what he sees as the coming year's top story.
So the top ag story, I think we're going to finish the Farm Bill. We'll have that done. But I think it'll be trade. I really think it'll be the trade agreements that are so important to us. We really have to be there as agriculture, make sure that when agreements are made with foreign countries, that agriculture is well represented and treated equitably.
I'm Dave Russell, Brownfield.
There's more to come as we review the year 2013 from Brownfield, Ag News for America.